You are listening to the Vital MX post-race show, presented by Decal Works.
Hello and welcome to the Decal Works post-race show on Vital MX. The 2024 Monster Energy Supercross Series continues to deliver on every front imaginable. And myself, Lewis Phillips, along with Michael Lindsay, will break down all that happened at round four of the current series in Anaheim over the weekend. The first Triple Crown of the series, the first true event of the series, you could say. No mud, no first round jitters. And truthfully, we have no more answers, which is great. Parity is everywhere that you look. For now, enjoy it while you can, but we'll get into that. First of all, of course, I would like to thank Decal Works, your title sponsor of this post-race show, as well as all of our post-race content on Vital MX. Without Decal Works, we wouldn't be doing this podcast, post-race interviews, and so you have a lot to thank Decal Works for. Of course, they also sponsor the Red Bull KTM Factory Racing Team, and so they lead the 450 Supercross class. That speaks to Decal Works quality. So I encourage you to rush over there as quickly as possible. And thank you to our presenting sponsors, Beta and Fox Racing. We will have more from them later in the show, so keep an eye out for that. As mentioned, I'm joined by Michael Lindsay. Hello.
Hello, hello, hello.
I got myself a bit in a muddle there with that intro. Not sure why.
It's just like a Triple Crown. You just don't know what to say about it.
I ended up in the woods a little bit and couldn't navigate my way out, but we made it, and here we are. So, as I said, the first true event.
But it wasn't.
It's really good. Honestly, it's really good. That may be one of the best nights of racing I've seen in a long time. I honestly have no idea who the best rider is, so that's great. It's all great. The only problem is we are now four rounds in, and I don't have much to say in the essence of, don't expect me to tell you who's going to win this championship or who is the best rider for what reason, because we don't know, but that is great.
Well, so we were talking about last weekend. It's like, okay, and we have the opener, the two mud races, and I was talking about like, oh, Triple Crown, three great drops. We're going to learn something this week, and this is really going to kind of put us on a path. I don't know why the hell I said that. Like, looking back, it's like, yeah, it's a typical Triple Crown. It's somewhat chaotic. Almost everybody has some good mains, some bad mains. So I come out of this really, yeah, okay, on to round five. I don't know what's going on. But I guess on the one hand, four rounds in, four different winners, and I'm starting to really lean towards the seven or eight mark for total winners this year. I will say at this point, come on, Tomac has to win. I think Jace Anderson proved he can put himself in a position where at least he proved he can be a winner again this year. You would have to imagine Ken Roczen's going to. So that puts us at seven if those three pull it off. And then there's always the chance of like a Barcia sneaking in there. So I'm definitely leaning towards a higher win, total winners this year. That's about the only thing I've really learned so far.
If we end up with five winners or less, it will be a travesty.
Yes.
Because, as you say, Tomac is definitely going to win. Tomac is my pick to win Detroit. We'll get into that. Anderson, call me crazy, that may be the best I've ever seen Anderson ride.
The final, I started my questions with him. Like, when was the last time you sent it that hard to main? His final main coming through the pack, aggression, speed, everything. I was watching, like, watching the lap times he was putting down, knifing through the field, you know, second best lap time, third best lap time of the race, some laps, and doing it while passing two people a lap, three people a lap. No, that's what I looked at. I'm like, okay, in period this year, Anderson has been better than last year. But seeing that, I'm like, okay, this is the Anderson that won seven mains a couple of years ago. That's riding better than the Anderson that won the title.
I would go even further. I think that this is better than the Anderson we saw in 2022. This is the second main event. He took off and looked incredible. The pass he made on Webb, was it? On the start straight? Incredible. I almost tweeted it, but I felt I didn't have enough confidence in my opinion. I do believe that was the best Anderson has ever ridden, which is crazy to say. He's done a gazillion races.
Intensity. Like, this sounds so stupid. he was accelerating. As dumb as it sounds, he's just flat out was accelerating in places that people weren't. I couldn't believe how aggressive he was landing off jumps into corners where, don't get me wrong, we're talking about the best guys in the world. They're carrying plenty of momentum. He would just land wide open, like just that extra little bit he would stay on in places. And it was so noticeable watching him get through guys and get into the lead in that second race.
In that spirit, I do believe that across the Triple Crown evening, the best rider was Jason Anderson, because Tomac was great in the final main, but the first one was kind of meh, and the second one wasn't much better.
I think the first one he came from ways, but the second one was really weird. Like, I don't know what happened in the second main for him, like, compared to the rest of them. That was rough.
Yeah, I wasn't that big on the first one. He came from a little way back, and then it looked like he was going to go further forward, and he just didn't. But... So that kind of, I lean towards Anderson in that vein.
Oh, yeah.
Chase was amazing in the first race, but didn't back it up in the second two. Like, so across the board, yeah, I give the nod to Anderson quite confidently.
No, I think Anderson was the best guy in the night. Even though Chase's second main was rough, I still saw Moats Chase. I don't know. I might sound a little crazy here, because don't get me wrong. Webb won, but I think Webb came in, like, he rode great, but he was sick. It's funny, I'm sick myself going riding today. You remember that when you're under, like, really under the weather, like head cold, stuff like that, there's a weird thing where muscle memory is an amazing thing. Like, when things are clicking, you can kind of just put in laps when you're under the weather, but being able to pick up your intensity and, like, make racing decisions hard when your head's clouded. So, I mean, Webb was riding amazing, but you could see also hearing him after the race mention how sick he was. Kind of makes sense why he was just kind of chill where he was most of the races. I don't know. Do you give Cooper or Chase the nod for second best guy on the night, pure pace wise? Because I still thought Chase, other than, yes, the second race wasn't great, I was still pretty impressed with Chase at quite a few points throughout the night.
I'd go Jet.
You would go Jet? Okay.
I'd go Anderson, Jet, Chase, Eli, Coop.
Really? Okay.
But then again, that's hard to say, because based on the final main event, Eli should not be that far down the list. But I don't know. It's honestly hard to discuss these Triple Crowns, because it changes so quickly from one main event to the next. And again, that signals the parity that we're enjoying at the moment. But you leave Anaheim and there are positives and negatives for each rider at some point in the night. So there is no definitive vibe, to use a really shit term. There's no definitive vibe with any of these riders. It's kind of a bit across the board, which is great. Again, this is great. I truly believe that right now there are 7 riders. They can all look in the mirror and tell themselves they are the best rider and they are going to win this championship.
I will say the one thing that came from the night that's something I've expected so far this season, and it took till round 4 to get, was Jorge Prado, amazing starts, getting shuffled immediately, but then sort of, I hate to use these words, I don't mean this in a demeaning way, holding up a pack with very unique racecraft. I loved your tweets, by the way. Would you like to speak to a Mr. Fevre? Ken Roczen would like to speak to a Mr. Fevre.
Yes, I didn't receive enough credit for those tweets. It's a real shame.
Those are great. Because that's what I was thinking. That's what I was almost expecting early on. Where Tomac Prado was like, okay, he's going to nail great starts. He's going to be fast, but not fast enough to hang with the top 3. But we have so much parity that he would slip to 4th or 5th. And then, again, I'm not saying a bad way, little bit of a roadblock would hold up this group that would mash together. So if you were in that group and you went down, which we saw with Jet, we saw with Chase, a couple different guys, Ferrandis in the last one, if you were in that pack and got to the front and then went down, you would instantly lose like 6-7 spots because it was kind of so jumbled up. I will say with Jorge's racecraft, he took some very unique lines to hold people up. It seemed like every time somebody would make a move, he would end up exactly where, oh, by the end of this corner, I'll get him, and then Jorge would be there.
He is an incredibly smart racer.
Yes.
He is almost Cooper Webb-esque. Very different, but the core approach to racing, I feel, is quite similar.
Imagine, like, I think in tighter confines than Supercross, that pays off more for him, even though it does in GPs. Imagine Jorge half a second a lap faster, how dangerous he'd be with. racecraft like that in Supercross.
Well, and starts.
Yes.
We normally do this later in the show, but I feel as though getting your opinion on this is crucial to move forward. Who is the most dangerous right now? As in, who would you put money on? I'm not saying to win the title, but right now, in the next 2 weeks, who would you bet on as far as picking this thing up and running away with it? A little bit.
I'm between Jason and Eli.
And again, talking short term, I believe that the next 2 weeks will be massive for Eli because, first of all, well, there are multiple reasons. A, he's won Anaheim 2 in the past, and that's been the springboard for his season. So I do kind of get a similar vibe from his final main event win.
Yeah.
Like, okay, this could be the start. B, we're heading to Detroit, soft dirt, ruts. Eli typically shines there, so I feel like that will really extract the best out of him. C, the week after Detroit is Glendale, and that is effectively the house for Eli built.
Yep.
So I do feel as though the next 2 weeks, utilizing the momentum from the final main event, will be extremely positive for him. And if they're not, I will be questioning quite a lot of things.
I agree. It'll just be interesting to see if anybody can take, so four rounds, four winners, but you know, it's, I guess it's not extreme to say four rounds, four different winners, but the fact that still nobody has stepped up, like nobody has really carried momentum multiple weeks in a row. So yes, we would hope the next two rounds we would see somebody step up and do that. And if we make it two more rounds with just everything continuing to trade places how it is, we're going to be stuck on this podcast still saying we don't know what the hell to talk about.
I do, as I said, I do believe Eli wins Detroit, and that will be five winners in five rounds. I would put money on that. I do feel fairly strong in my conviction, but then again, it does seem to be start dependent at the moment. But even that, who's the best starter in this group? I don't really have an opinion.
I thought about that going into the Triple Crown because three starts, just like, I think it was, I was doing the fantasy articles, like, who do I recommend as the bet, like, okay, yeah, you have your classic good starters, like thinking of Prado, but I was like, who, as of recent, because of the mud race and just how it's been going, I'm like, who's been the good starter lately? It's kind of been all over the place. Like I said, Chase is one of the most consistent, but I'm not super sold. It's kind of weird that Jet lost off from, I mean, it's outdoors, indoor, but like outdoors, great starts, most of the SMX, pretty good starter in most of SMX, and then as of late, like I was kind of almost, I watched a couple of his starts last time, the Triple Crown, good jumps. I don't know if it's just what's going on. Maybe something finally got his head, but I noticed he would just almost shut down a little earlier. He kind of got pushed around a couple times, which has been very unjet like.
Confidence. I honestly believe that. Did he whole shot the main event at Anaheim 1, or he was definitely in the lead right away if he didn't whole shot?
He was in the lead right away. I don't think he whole shot it. I thought...
I was considering whether this would be possible. I would love to talk to a sports psychologist and show them Jets January and kind of get their opinion on... So, he came out one on debut, as expected, dominant in the fact that he led every lap. You can bet your bottom dollar that the week from Anaheim 1 to San Francisco, his heart rate was lower. He was more relaxed. Anaheim 1 was confirmation that, yeah, okay, as suspected, I can win this easily, in his mind. Then San Francisco put a cat amongst the pigeons, but it was a mud race, easy to disregard. San Diego was then a difficult race for very unique reasons. Okay, still a bit odd, so you can easy to disregard. I say easy to disregard, but what I saw at Anaheim 2 was someone who was a little more flustered than normal. There were more little mistakes. There were, not that he was rushing, but we don't see Jet make that many mistakes, and I'm not referring to the crashes. I'm talking about mistakes that didn't lead to a crash, but cost him a tenth here and there.
Yeah, cost him time, cost him the ability to solidify a pass and make them happen. Like,
it was just a little untidier than we're used to with Jet. And then again, the starts. I do believe that Jet's confidence is probably the lowest. I don't like using that term because I don't believe that lowest best describes it. Okay, this is better. I believe that Jet now feels the most vulnerable that he has since his rookie 250 season.
I could go with that at least in 3 years.
And to take that point further, he was so good in 250s that he almost skipped class. It's almost like a really smart kid in school who gets to skip grades. That's kind of what Jet did.
Well, we talked about it plenty when he was dominating. There was kind of the question going to 450 is just... 250 is, like you said, almost skipping grade, being a better grade. It's like, oh yeah, there was races he came from behind, but he would dispatch people so easily. You would wonder that, and even we said last year, 450 outdoors, not having a full field of competition, did he really learn what racing, basically, you know, over half this field has won 250 titles like him? Has he, what the difference in experience level, the skill level of these guys? Like, it's just not that easy to dispatch them and get through them, even with a bad start, even though you could look at 250 and go, oh, he was great at coming through the pack. Different quality of people.
I believe we are now seeing a rookie. As plain and simple as that analysis is, I do believe that we are seeing a rookie.
That is really a stretch of you there.
Talking about feeling vulnerable, I would imagine that crash in the final main event is maybe the worst of all that has happened thus far, because that crash was solely on him. There was no other factor. It was just a dumb mistake. And it's hard to look yourself in the mirror after one of those, hard to maybe brush that off, because especially on the last lap, you had the red plate in hand. So I would imagine that's quite difficult for him to process and, you know, just maybe lives with you a little bit. And again, I would love to talk to a sports psychologist and get their opinion on this and what they see in Jet's body language from what he's saying, just because I do feel like there's a very interesting deeper story there that we're not really getting into because we don't have the expertise. I could go to college and do a psychology degree, but that will take some time, so I won't be ready for Detroit.
Then take a crash course this week.
I could try, but no, it genuinely fascinates me. Like, it's, and I like that. I like that there's so much depth to this championship. But then again, maybe that's all moot because actually, it's been quite difficult for Jet lately. If it wasn't for that crash, he would have the red plate. So that's almost a massive confidence booster of, I've not even been on a podium and I was pretty much about to have the red plate again. So this isn't that hard. Even when it's going bad, it's going good, you know?
Do you look at, I was thinking about this with 250s, like Art, you could say this about like Smith and RJ, like so many guys in Triple Crowns because of the one, they all have one bad main. It's so funny how many of these guys you look at and go, man, they did great damage limitation tonight. And I know deep down riders will just be frustrated, but how many of you look at and go, man, it didn't go great, but it didn't go bad. And that's a tough one to look at Jet 6, but like you said, it was so close to being the red point, to having the red plate. Like, it didn't go that bad. But you got to imagine, just even though on like I said, we sit here and break it down, go, man, he was so close to having the red plate again. There's still that damage to the confidence because of how it's gone.
This is the best way to sum it up. The perception depends on Jet's character, because if you are a glass half full person, there are so many positives. If you are a glass half empty person, there are quite a lot of negatives to stew on. So it all depends on Jet.
Yeah. While we're still on the Jet subject, I have to bring this up because we experienced it being in the stadium and we tweet about it and it was mentioned in different features. But opening ceremonies, the fan reaction to Jet, I knew it would be mixed after this week in a sense. I didn't expect it to be all positive. I will straight say it. It was more negative than I expected, quite a bit, by a pretty big margin, actually.
I wasn't expecting any negativity. Like, it's not that big a deal.
It's not, but isn't it crazy how, like, that's what blew my mind. I expected a little bit, just like having read through Jason's comments, like definitely a lot of people attached to what Jason said, and it spun, you know, a negative view on Jet in some people's eyes. And again, we're Jet. There's people that have already that negative opinion, like, oh, they're fed down our throats, blah, blah, blah. So once you give an actual, what they felt like was a real negative action he had done, I knew some people would latch onto it. I expected, given a percentage pie, when they brought him out, I was thinking, oh, okay, you might hear a little bit of booing. You may hear less chanting. If like 10 or 20% of the people in this stadium don't look at him as positively as they did the weekend before, whether that's booing or just not even cheering for him, just I was thinking, okay, a percentage of people here, a low percentage, don't view him as favorably as they used to. But when like 70% of the stadium boos him instead of cheering, I was like, okay, I'm shocked how big of an effect that had in 1 week.
Yeah, I wonder if I could get an interview with Jet before Detroit solely on this mental discussion. But then I don't know if he would have much to give, because a massive strength of his is he doesn't overthink this stuff. So I don't feel like there would be many answers.
Yeah, based on some of the discussions we've had with him before, and some of the questions you've done with him about literally that, and asking even Hunter about him and his family, like, suppose that's one of his strongest points. Stuff like this, I think he does brush off. It'll be curious to see, but I guess I'm also kind of, you know, I spoke to Jason after the race, and he said in a very respectful way, like, kid's on his way to being a legend. He's like, if he keeps doing what he's doing, people will love him again. And he mentioned the whole Carmichael being booed thing, and he was right. Like, it happens. A lot of guys at some point in their career are going to be negative, and it'll wash off. I'm just kind of quietly curious from the outside, not interested in the drama, but just curious. As the sport has changed and digital media and social media can have such an influence on people's opinions so drastically, I'm curious to see how long it hangs in there over the next couple races, just seeing opening ceremonies reactions and just seeing how long it takes to basically wash off. Just curious how the sport has changed in that way.
Circling back around, Chase was really picture perfect in the first main event and very effective in the second main event. Despite the finish, third main event was definitely probably his worst, but still not bad. I almost feel like that was a different Chase, and not in a bad way. I just feel like that was a very measured Chase Sexton.
That's something I was hoping we would get to catch him after the race. Cause I mean, one question I want to ask him, whether it's strictly a technical question that is bike related, or just more how he's carrying himself in general, is I want to ask him, you know, where are you better than last year, and where are you maybe, in a sense, I hate to say the words worse, but like, is there a part of you from last year that's missing? But is that, when I say that, is that a good thing? You know what I mean? Like, just the way he's carrying himself, measuring himself, tempering maybe expectations at times, where he's making his decisions seem to be a very different Chase than last year.
I believe I have the answer to that, and this is what I will ask him if he's on press day this weekend. I believe that the Honda was so good that it felt like the window was bigger. So then when it suddenly, there was no middle ground between it being amazing and then it suddenly not being good, hence the crashes. It almost encouraged so much false trust that it was a shock when it suddenly didn't work anymore.
So,
whereas I think the KTM is easier to read and gives you a more accurate representation of, like, okay, I need to back it down now because the conditions are starting to go away, as is the bike setup. And so we are seeing a Chase who has a much better understanding of how the race is developing and how his capabilities go along with that.
I would say, like, from my standpoint, we say this all the time when we do bike testing, every time I talk about the Honda, I feel like the Honda really does, amongst all our bikes, have the highest peak capable performance, but I think it operates in the smallest window, and it's very quick to find the edge of that window. Now, something I mentioned a couple times last year about, like, him riding the Honda, when me and you would go back and forth, is it the bike, is it him? What I would say just straight up, that I think that, like, we talked quite a few races, and I would say afterwards, like, I think he just straight up pushes too hard. This is an example, and he's talking about this year. I think part of it's the KTM. He doesn't ride the KTM as far over the front end. I think the Honda would give him false trust to do that quite often, and he would. I think I used this one time on podcast last year. I said that I feel like he's always trying to go his qualifying pace because I think he believed he could on the bike. I think he literally thought it could work, but eventually that window, you would run outside of it. Like I said, you would just get away from it where this isn't a negative. I'm not trying to say the KTM's worse, but the KTM may not allow that maximum possible pace, but I think the window it operates in is wider, so it kind of naturally holds you back and tempers your expectations a little bit.
Yeah, I believe it is a positive. The KTM gives you a better reading of what's going on. So you
and that's what I'm asking. That's what I'm saying. I ask him, like, I hate to say it's a negative, but that's what I'm saying where, hey, I'm not saying were you worse in a bad way, but like, are you worse because you don't push your edges for all time because you've tempered your expectation of the bike and it operates in a different window for you? Like, in a sense, that's a positive for him.
Yeah, I would agree. 100th top five for Jason Anderson, so congratulations. Yep.
Did you double check that? Yeah, because he messaged me earlier asking me that, and I was like, let me go check. And I went.
Yeah, my spreadsheet says so.
Okay. Well, his exact question to me is like, hey, who's your guy that does the really good stats? I've heard that I may have hit 100 top fives, and I was like, I'll double check with Lewis because he's way better at math this than me. But I double checked. I was like, yeah, you have 84, 450, and 16, 250 top fives.
A cool little stat that I am following and I have been following since Anaheim 1. Now, post Anaheim 2, Cooper Webb has led 411 laps in his Supercross career. That's the third highest out of the current competitors, second being Roczen, first being Tomac.
Eli.
Okay. Chase is closing on Cooper. As I said, Cooper has 411 laps led. Chase now has 388. So I'm very curious whether this isn't 450s only. This is both. Like,
yeah. No, that's still impressive that Chase is already, for as short as he's been in the class, is already that close.
This would come across as a negative, but it isn't, because this best illustrates Cooper Webb's MO. I'm going backwards. His most recent victories, this is how many laps led he's had en route to those. Anaheim 2, 1. Last year, 5 laps led. And then via his other victory, 4 laps led. 2021, 7, 2, 7. So he's not a lead every lap guy. Whereas Chase has run the table a couple of times, and that helps a lot. I'll do the same with Chase. His last visa, his laps led en route to his last couple of victories. 12. 25, 22, 12, 15, 2, 24. Like, again, you see the difference.
How big is Eli's number? Like, 700 massive. Or something nuts?
Inclusive of both classes, 1,068. 450 only, 942.
Oh, my God.
So he will hit one. I would bet that he will hit 1,000 laps led in 450s this year.
Wow.
I may as well complete this now. So as I said, out of the current competitors, Tomac leads on 1,068. Roczen is second on 714, and then Webb third, 411. Chase fourth, 388, and Anderson fifth on 360.
The 100 top fives for Jason. Just hearing that, one thing that kind of strikes me is, like, you think back to Jason's earliest days on 250s, even early 450. I hate to misread him in this way, but Jason just didn't, probably for a lot of people, didn't strike as the kind of person that would have that kind of staying power, I guess. Like, you just expect him to stick it out that long, if that makes sense.
Yeah, but are you talking from the viewpoint of you wouldn't expect him to just race for that long, or are you talking from a consistency viewpoint?
I still think even a consist. I think a little of both. I think a little of both,
because you've got a I believe that perception has changed more lately.
Oh yeah,
like lately, it's years, become it, lately it's become Jason Anderson is the wild child kind of vibe. But his husky years, he was kind of the guy who would rarely win, but would just be there more often than not, you know? Like,
yeah, his championship year was very much that way. What's that top five stat look like for, again, some of the other current riders? Do you by any chance have it, or?
Well, you're kind of really stepping on my feature here, but, what, 450 only?
Yeah.
Okay, 450 only. Webb, 72 top fives. Tomac, 122. Anderson, 450 only, 84. Nod to Hurlings. Sexton, 450 only, 37. And I'll do Roczen as well because I feel like he belongs. Roczen, 450 top fives, 88. So four more than Anderson, which is actually, that is surprising to me. But actually, maybe not. Maybe you would think that Anderson would have more 450 top fives because Roczen has been inconsistent and in and out a few times. But we digress. Speaking of Roczen, actually, lovely segue. Behind Dylan Ferrandis in the points, and he does not deserve to be in that position. My biggest disappointment leaving Anaheim 2 is Roczen is now quite far out of the championship picture, and he does not deserve that because he is riding so well. But for whatever reason,
it just won't go his way.
It's just not working.
it's so weird because he looks so phenomenal. Again, I would have thought by now, if we were going to have four rounds and four winners based on how he looked at the first round, I would have thought he would be one of them. It is very weird to hear him. I mean, it makes sense when you look at his totals, but it is very weird that he's this far back in points because it does not match the effort we've seen on track, his speed, you know, how he's been so far this year.
The crazy thing is, we've had the story with Roczen so many times. I actually believe he can win the championship this year. I genuinely believe that. But it's now looking already quite difficult. But he has shown such brilliance that I honestly, and I haven't, we've rolled our eyes in the past at, yeah, like Ken's going to win a championship, there will be low points. But this year, I honestly say that with conviction. Like, I believe he could have won this championship. And he still could. It's just harder now than it would have been otherwise.
It is crazy, though, even though we're saying it's a lot. I mean, he's eighth in points, but it's still only, what is it, 23?
Yeah, but that's a lot after four rounds.
Yes, and I feel like it's... Okay, what was eighth in points last year after four rounds?
I don't know.
I'm going to go look real quick.
I can't be asked to pull that up.
I'll go look real quick.
But he just doesn't deserve to be that far down. And actually, selfless plug...
40 points last year.
So what are you saying that as positive for Roczen or?
I think so.
Well, no, it's kind of meaningless because eighth place in points last year wasn't making a run at the championship.
No, but
so it's kind of irrelevant. We don't have. There's no data suggests.
This is right. Last year he was fifth in points after four rounds, and how many points was he down? He was down 22 points last year in fifth.
Again, I don't know what you want to do with this information. It's kind of like. Meaningless.
I don't think it's that bad. I agree. It's, don't get me wrong, it's a long shot. I don't think it's that terrible.
The best, if you want data to kind of give a reading on Roczen, the best idea to look into is what's the furthest that someone has come from behind to win the championship to see if anyone has ever come from 24, 25 points down to win. Yes, but I can't really think of an instance apart from Trey Canard outdoors in 250s, which is irrelevant also. Irrelevant. We finally had some sort of positivity from Malcolm Stewart because he was in the top 10, and that is good, and he was fast in qualifying, so that is good. So although the results still sucked by his standards, this is some sort of step forward, and we'll take that.
It is, but man, considering how good qualifying was, I mean, the biggest positive I guess I had was the first main event. Christian Craig and Malcolm Stewart made it through the first lap without each crashing, which has not happened this year.
Actually, no, the first main event, Craig crashed in turn two.
Did he? I thought he made the end of the first lap and crashed on lap two.
No, it was turn two.
Oh, never mind. Maybe it was the second. Again, I get my mains mixed up. I remember one of the mains, maybe it was number two. I'm like, oh my god, they both made it past the first lap, but then one of them crashed right after that. But hey, that's got to be a weird one. I got to ask Ramsey this. Imagine being in that truck. Like, you've got RJ that has all this positivity going for him. On one hand, you want to reinforce that. There's got to be people on the team that are excited there. But you also have to temper that with dealing with the 450 guys that are over there probably thinking, oh, we're just the redhead stepchildren. Now, look, 250s are good. We suck. We're terrible every weekend. They're only happy for them. Like, that's got to be a tough balance a little bit because the 450 team is underperforming so drastically.
I mean, Christian Craig does have a positive for the symmetrical fans out there because his finishes across four rounds are 20-14. So if OCD and symmetry is floats your boat, there you have it. And another idea that Christian Craig has, which floats his boat, is that he wears Fox Racing 2024. It is Fox Racing's 50th anniversary year, marking five decades of getting after it. Rides, innovations, victories celebrate 50 years of looking forward with Fox. Hello, future. And I say with confidence that the 450 wing of Rockstar Energy Husqvarna Factory Racing is saying hello, future, and come quicker, future. So yeah, thank you to Fox Racing for supporting this podcast. So I interviewed Hunter after the race. A rare Lawrence interview surfaced, and I said to him, like, honestly, I don't know whether to stand here and tell you you're doing a good job or tell you that you're not doing a very good job, because it's kind of hard to read. And he said, yeah, to be honest, four rounds in and I'm mind boggled. He literally used that phrase. He said, I don't know what to think. I don't know if I'm doing good. He just was like, yeah, basically lost for words a little bit.
I kind of feel the same. Like, I know we talked about, oh, wouldn't be surprising if he won A1. But at the same time, him getting around tenths isn't not surprising. So I don't know to be harsh, like, oh, this isn't going good, or this is going how it was expected, or we haven't really talked about it in the last couple weeks because I have no clue what to say.
Yeah, like, there were moments where he went forwards, there were moments where he went backwards. So again, like, I don't know. I will say, I believe that Prado has been more impressive than Hunter in January.
Yeah.
And shown more. So tip of the hat to Prado in that respect. And maybe that there answers our Hunter question, because I do not believe that anyone had that on their bingo card.
Is it weird though that, like, even looking at the overall result, I mean, 12th overall, you know, compared to the past rounds on paper, it's not as good of a result, but I thought that was the best. Again, it's what I was expecting for Supermori. Great starts. Watching again his racecraft, how it works in Supercross, like, that to me had to be the night so far of racing that he has learned the most in the four races he's done here, and that had to be the biggest confirmation that, again, based on the racecraft and the starts, if he can find half a second a lap, he's really in this thing.
I can confirm that American teams have started to contact Prado.
Oh, I bet.
I may have put one in touch with Prado. So there you go. Inside man. Beta very nearly had two riders in the main event. John Short came up just short in the LCQ. I believe he lost for final transfer position on the last lap.
Yeah, Freddie. He got it because Freddie went down. And then Freddie was able to get up, come back, and get him right at the end.
But even to be in the position where you have the possibility of having two bikes in the main event is quite the turnaround from where Beta were just a couple of weeks ago. So great to see their progress, and great to have them aboard the post-race show. Vital MX is proudly supported by Beta Motorcycles, which has been a family-owned company since 1905. Beta manufactures the finest enduro, trials, dual sport, and motocross motorcycles that are known for their top quality and rideability. Their newest model, the 450 RX, is the first four-stroke motocross model built by Beta. It was designed to offer a ride that is more forgiving with the rare combination of premium performance and undeniable appeal. Check out betausa.com for more information. Thank you to Beta. Thank you to Fox Racing. Thank you to Decal Works. 250s?
I was going to say Plessinger. Skimmed right over the red playholder.
The first main event was his worst ride of the season.
Mm-hmm.
But to his credit, and this is a very positive sign for the upcoming rounds, he came out firing in the next two. So he was down, but not out. And that is a quality that keeps you in the championship fight. So that actually was extremely positive, but I had one eyebrow raised in the first main event.
Well, the thing I'm a little curious about, it's still very early in the season, but sort of comes off the Jorge conversation, is we've talked about Prado comes to the U.S. If he stays Austrian, I lean towards it being on KTM, gear deals, etc. This man is going to get paid, basically, if he's coming here. Plessinger, one-year extension. You know, does he move? But he's also doing so well here early in the season. Does KTM have to open up the wallet and go three-man 450 next year? Do we see a situation where they run Prado, Plessinger, and Chase on KTM 450s? Or do you think that is unlikely and something has to give?
I would say it's a possibility, because I would imagine the team sponsors on KTM would demand Plessinger. I would imagine that if you told Red Bull that they are moving Plessinger to the Rockstar team, Red Bull would maybe say, well, we would quite like to keep that guy.
See, yeah. I would think they would move Plessinger to, I think he would get moved to TLD.
Well, I'm just thinking because Barsha is still under contract and Malcolm's still under contract, but Craig's contract is up. So I'm just talking as far as available spots.
Yeah, I'm just saying, because I think even they were talking about, I mean, it all depended on the if Webb stayed thing, but there was that conversation about moving AP to TLD even this year with the whole symmetry of 2-2 on all the OEMs. But again, Aaron, star power, like what he's done now, can you force him, even the same conversation with Jorge, can you push him over to Gas to be locked into gear deals now? I don't think so. As much as like his star power has grown, what he can command from a gear company, he had a big re-up with Thor this year, so I think he's in a position where you can't move him as easily as before.
Well, I believe that Prado won't be on KTM, so there's that.
Blue or green.
Point.
Blue or green.
Or red.
Red?
Meh, I was just spitballing with Ducati.
That's another year away.
Hey, Prado, do you mind sticking around in MXGP for one more year and then we'll move you to America? This contract is worth a gazillion dollars. I mean, I don't know any. I'm purely spitballing. But
yeah,
I could see Ducati looking at that as an option to pursue. It's kind of their best shot at getting a guy. And it kills two birds with one stone, because he can be there. He can be their MXGP face for their debut and their American face for their debut. On to 250s. Again, back to the psychology point, Levi Kitchen is now a two-time winner. Both of those have come via Triple Crowns. I wonder what that feels like.
It's going to feel better this go-around. Like, and he definitely seemed more confident. Even last year, you know, say he won, but you were saying, oh, it's a Triple Crown, like he didn't win a moto or a race or however we want to label it. And you could kind of tell talking to him, like he was happy he won, but it wasn't like over the moon because he didn't win a main, where the difference was last night he was very genuinely excited because, of course, he battled it out with RJ really great in race one and two to actually win one of the races. And I think just how solid he's been across the opening rounds. I don't think it'd be one thing if he won the Triple Crown but didn't win a moto again. I think it would be pretty weird in the head, but I think he's got to be confident in this one, having won at least one of the races and been right there on the other two.
Oh yeah, I'm certain he's confident and he fully deserved that win. He's riding amazing and now is my championship favorite. But I just feel like there must be an itch to get a real main event win, you know?
Oh, I'm sure.
Get that done. because it is kind of weird that he's two wins in and they're both triple crowns and a year apart. Like, but he's now tied for the red plate. And as I've said for a few weeks, I suspect that consistency will be his greatest strength. So, and you can see that on the Anaheim 2 results sheet, because he was far more consistent than anyone else in the field.
That was the weird thing I asked RJ about after the race was, is it weird being in the, again, him and Levi put up such good scores on the first two races. Nobody else even came close. I mean, look at Thrasher with a 3.10, Shimoda with a 9.3, Smith with a 4.8. Even after RJ went down in the third race, he had such a large margin to anybody else. It's got to be weird out there racing because typical RJ, he's pushing, but come to find out rear flat tire. But also, didn't really matter. He could gain a ton of spots or lose a ton of spots, and it doesn't do anything in the third and final race, which is super, super weird. Like, he could have gone forward. It would have taken, like, pretty much getting to Levi to win the race. But even he was going backwards, he would have had to lose, I think, 4 or 5 spots to affect his overall to third, even.
If I remember right, I actually believe that there was one point in that last main event where if he made a pass, it actually would have hurt him, because it would have helped another rider get closer. I can't remember the exact situation, but this can happen in a triple crown where you make a pass and it has no bearing on your result, but it does take a point off of another rider and help another rider get closer.
Was it like if he were to get Joe, it was going to move Jordan up, so Jordan would score more points?
Maybe it was. Yeah, like I believe it was more championship picture.
Yeah, if I remember right, him and, I could be wrong here, but I thought him and Joe were close at one point. It was basically like, oh, if he gets Joe, like, it helps Jordan or something. Like, there was something that was going to help Jordan get one more spot.
Yeah, like, it was actually much better for him to not make a pass, which is a very
weird. Was it before he crashed? Was that what it was? Before he crashed, he was trying to get Joe? Was that
I can't remember. It was just sometime in the last main event where I was like, how weird, like, how do you tell him, don't make a pass? Like, how does that compute? But yeah, I think Levi is my title favorite, just by a hair.
I agree. I think Levi, and then I'm kind of still, like, even though Jordan had a rough night, I mean, Jordan did great damage limitation across three mains. I'm sure he was pretty much freaking over by the end of the night, because I felt like all three mains, he was just trying to salvage it. RJ showed us again why he won A1, but Levi is just so solid so far. It's hard to bet against him, but it's also at the same time, I'm not favorite, but not sold on it. It's still, to me, it's Kitchen, Hampshire, Smith it's Kitchen, Hampshire, Smith in that order for me for favorites, and all three of them are still in it.
Yeah, Jordan did incredibly well. It could have been
he had to have passed the most people of the night.
I don't really understand how it went so badly. I guess it was just one of those nights. But it just seemed like, well, for one, he couldn't buy a start. Mm-hmm. Well, that was pretty much all she wrote. But yeah, I was very impressed with the progress that he made.
So one thing that's funny with Levi, and it's still something I'm curious about. So we said this over and over last year. If Levi gets a start, he finishes well. He doesn't get a start, he doesn't. And he sort of confirmed that talking to me, because we were talking about his starts in general, and I asked him, you know, have you changed anything about your technique? And he said, not at all. It's all bike. And, you know, we all think of, oh, the Star bike's the best bike out there in terms of power. And that's still not wrong, but it came up with a conversation I had with Gillen Ferris about how hard that bike is to launch properly and how much he struggled to figure that out. And Levi even kind of straight up confirmed this. Like, he's like, oh, you saw last year, if I got a good start on the bike, I could win. But if I got a 10th place start on the bike, I couldn't do good. So it's still kind of funny the way he said that to me is, the starts is the way the PC bike makes power. He said it's really easy for him to get consistent starts on it, but he also kind of sold himself a little short. So where he said, he straight up admitted that last year when he got bad starts, he couldn't, you know, make it happen. So I'm still kind of curious. That's the one thing I haven't seen from Levi this year is, okay, if Levi gets a 10th place start, how far can he come through?
Yeah, I do feel like that's less of a problem for him in Supercross. My biggest question mark with Levi is how the hell he had a really bad style on a star bike And somehow he's now like the most stylish rider in the field. I don't understand.
Yeah. I asked him, I can't remember what race asked him. I felt bad. I'm like, does everybody bring this up? And he said, no, he notices it. He said the biggest thing is on and this sounds weird, counterproductive. He said on the star bike, he was always kind of squatted off the back. Cause
you're
said,
like a hunchback.
Yeah. And he said it was something about how it didn't steer well. So he was really hunched over, I think with like trying to get weight from his upper chest, but he was trying to rear steer with his legs. Like, he just said the PC bike, he basically said it turns too good. He's had to like back off basically how much front end grip has. He basically said that he felt like on the star bike, he was having to move around a lot, where he just looks so much more center poised on the PC bike. And I brought that up and he 100% agrees. He says he notices on the bike, everyone around him brings it up. And he just said it he didn't say he really worked on it. He said it kind of came naturally with the bike, just the way he's able to ride it. He said that's just where he ended up.
I will say, as bad as it's going for Joe Shimoda, the second main event was a really good ride. A really, really good ride. So, yeah, it's basically a disaster, but that second main event was really, really, really good.
How weird is it for... Is it 2 weekends in a row now? Or are we on 3 weekends in a row? Honda, nobody on the podium in either class after they had basically been on the podium in one class at least for a couple of years.
Sometimes it goes your way, sometimes it doesn't. I guess it's at the moment, it's just one of those years. I mean, Jet will figure it out here shortly. But 250-wise, yeah, it just seems like it's going to go down as one of those years.
Yeah.
Bourdon is doing very, very well. He needs more attention. After the second main event, he was actually in a prime position for...
is he fifth or sixth in points right now?
I don't have the points in front of me.
He is fifth in points. He's ahead of Joe Shimoda by 1 point.
Juju. I feel like Juju is now just having a very stereotypical rookie season. Came out with tons of flash. And now we're in the grind of this, and it's hard. There's ups and downs.
It's kind of weird because we have him and Ryder D, the two rookies, seventh and eighth last night. And I would say, based on first round or even impressions coming in, I knew from what we'd heard that Julian Juju would be extremely fast. I thought based off the first round, he was very solid for rookie, just got tight. Now he's kind of gone more into his stereotypical rookie season with a lot of mistakes and throwing it away at times. But then on the other hand, even though I'm saying like, I feel like, I don't want to say disappointment, but Juju is slightly underperforming based off what I'd heard preseason and kind of what he put down at A1. But then opposite, I feel like Ryder D is doing a little bit better and is a little more consistent than I thought he would be, if that makes sense.
Ryder D, it doesn't look like it in the results. I believe that Anaheim 2 was a massive breakthrough for Ryder D.
The first main, yes, he slipped back to fifth, but for 80% of that main, he looked composed, looked like he belonged up in the top three. He rode phenomenal in the first main.
Yeah, I'm fully there. He's going to be on the podium soon, I do believe. That was a breakthrough race for him, and it may not look like it, but that's why we go to the races.
Hey, weird one on the Bourdon thing real quick. If he continues the season as he is, last minute, coming over on the Bar X bike, the perception of the Suzuki, does somebody take a shot on him for next year? If he continues the path he is that enough to prove Bobby Reagan hires an 8th 250 rider, goes for Bourdon? Do you think somebody still takes that risk, or do we have enough other talent and people to talk about here that it just gets overlooked and he maybe just comes back for Bar X again or something?
I was actually going to ask you this because same line of thinking. He has been that good that I would presume that some teams are starting to kind of look at him and be like, cool, maybe there is a bit of flash here. But no, I believe that he will fill the role of we need a fill-in guy. Guy was solid, you know? Not
gonna be tough for him is risking it for next year is how quickly, if you're in his position. I think if he continues at this pace, he has enough bargaining power to maybe wait it out in the off season, like maybe make a Bar X MCR, somebody kind of like keep a spot open for him and keep delaying it and see if he could end up on a decent team as a fill-in. but then he's got to risk it and wait till probably December, where it's close enough to the season where he could end up somewhere for a decent amount of the season for Supercross.
No, just re-sign with Bar-X. That's for the best for him.
Mm-hmm.
Right, before we wrap this up, 250 East. It seems soon to be moving on to 250 East, but that is the situation that we find ourselves in. I have heard that Faulkner is flying. Mm-hmm. I have heard that Anstey is flying, and I have heard that Bennick is flying.
Yes.
So
somebody at Star told me that right now, but this was little asterisk here. This is during Deegan being hurt. So the way this was worded to me is the last couple weeks, Bennick has been the fastest guy on the team. And the way they said that, they were including when the West guys were practicing with him.
That, yeah, Bennick I've was heard
the
that
fastest rider on the team. They also told me, but it didn't go well, is they also told me Towers was the second fastest guy on the team in the same conversation.
Well, I heard exactly that as well. I've heard that Bennick is flying consistently, and I heard that Towers was second and right on Bennick and really, really, really good. So, yeah. I believe that, look, Deegan has been injured. We will never probably get official confirmation on that, but he has been.
Yeah. Scaphoid, the post of him on Monday, last Monday on Supercross was real. Last Monday, he was back on Supercross wearing a wrist brace, but that was his official first day back from it.
I believe that Detroit Deegan will probably be around fifth, but then the weeks before round two in Arlington will serve him well, and he's a bit more effective from that point on. But my question is, I would presume that Deegan's scaphoid, all it would take is a minor hit and it will set him back massively, I would presume. So that scares me a little bit.
Well, it scares me just with what scaphoids are, is just even jamming it. The weird part, though, is again, somebody I talked to there was like, he rode pit bikes all week, said does not even bother him one bit. And if the timelines we have are right, it's like 2 weeks from injuring it. I don't know, scaphoid's a super weird one. It's been a career ender for some riders. It's been a nagging year, 2 year injury for others. That's when James Stewart had these weird wrist problems after the 1 year him and reconnected. That's what he was struggling with, was a scaphoid, or also known as a vicar bone, that wouldn't heal properly. I'm really curious. Number one, Webb, the 1 year before 250 Outdoors, Webb was literally wearing a wrist brace, but we'd bring up, hey, your wrist. And he's like, what are you talking about? You know, first couple rounds. I feel like Deegan's going to follow the same line of questioning if we ask him at the first round. If they will admit to it, I'm very curious to hear what they did procedure-wise that supposedly it's so stable and it doesn't bother him that he was riding Supercross last week and supposedly is totally good with it.
I believe that the Detroit podium will be Faulkner, Anstey, Bennick in some order.
I'm trying to think of everybody else in the class.
Well, Star is basically injured across the board, or walking wounded in some way.
Yeah, Lopes' his arms still going numb. Moseman's got a back or a disc that keeps displacing. Bennick is good. Romano's shoulders, I think, tore up from preseason, and then Deegan coming in with scaphoid. So yes, Bennick's out. And Bennick got hit by a car supposedly this offseason on a road bike, but it didn't screw him up too much. So Bennick is the healthiest guy on the team somehow.
McAdoo should be good.
McAdoo. Also, who are we missing on PC?
Hamaker.
Seth. Oh, I'm a big believer in Seth. I slightly bumped Bennick off the podium for Seth just because.
Yeah, but I believe that Hamaker hasn't had it easy this offseason either.
Late start, unless I missed him getting dinged up again, but late start, later than Austin.
I
think Cameron's had the least prep time of the three, though, by far.
Well, he had that shoulder.
Cameron did the collarbone. Yeah, Cameron, that's what pushed him to East. But I know Seth got a little bit later start than Austin, but unless I missed something, I thought he'd been on the bike the whole time, but I may have missed something there.
Give me your Detroit winner and your your East champion.
We did a preseason, our 250 predictions. You went RJ, I went Austin for his coast. I do believe in Austin quite heavily. I believe in it. You know, the people around him, Tony Archer at Wrench from really good buddy of mine, and I hear a lot of good things. I go Austin win. I go Anstey second. I go Deegan third. I think Deegan still podiums the opener.
Oh, wow. I will go Faulkner wins Detroit, and I will go Anstey wins the title.
I'm Faulkner for the title. Faulkner for the title.
Yeah, you've got to show me that you can complete a season first. It's hard. It's hard to bet on Faulkner for a championship at this point until we see some sort of consistency. Yeah.
I have to back my preseason prediction. That's the biggest thing.
Well, we will find out soon enough.
And step away now. Why do I feel like we're missing somebody big? Like, not public. I feel like I'm missing somebody on East Coast.
Biao?
Eh.
Hymus?
Tom. That's I'm just naming off the teams in my head. Gillum's at Hussey. Barry Triumph. Swall Triumph. I guess I'm not missing. I just thought I was missing at least like one higher class name, but I guess not so much.
I believe that the East is probably more exciting than the West.
I think just because it's deeper. I think I said this before. I think top three to top five talent is similar in terms of skill. I think you could switch the guys around coast-wise and you'd get similar results. But past fifth place, East is definitely deeper. More team rides, more multiple riders on teams, more guys with good equipment, good support. So six on back in East is deeper, which I think will play a part into if one of your top three guys gets a bad start. I think East Coast will be harder, not by a massive margin, but it will be a little bit harder to get through the pack than a West Coast race will be this year, in my opinion.
Here's a good game. How long will it take for Faulkner and Deegan to butt heads?
Ooh. One lap. Oh, wow. Right off the bat. I was going to say by round three, but one lap. Okay.
No, it will be good. It feels very weird to me that we're already going east. I don't know why. Maybe because we had so many mudders that we haven't really seen the West, but off we go to Detroit. See you in Ford Field, everybody.
I have a question for you on that, and I've said this before, is I've always wanted to see East Coast start earlier just to get the narrative going, but now that it is starting this early, how do we actually, like, does it feel wrong, or are you happy that it is happening this early?
I don't know. I feel a bit weird about it all at the moment. I don't know why. Just all feels a bit weird and foreign to me this year. Don't know why.
I have one last little thing to throw in on 250s. Congratulations, Billy Leninovich, 40 years old, 250 main event. Has to be the oldest guy to make a main event.
Yeah, that's cool.
Don't sound so excited there, Lewis.
I don't know. Yeah, that's cool. Like, I don't know. That's cool. Good job. I don't know. Like, I haven't got much else to say other than, yep, that's cool.
Just good job. That's it.
Like it's not like, yeah, I don't know. Great. Well, that's it. Thank you to everyone for listening to the Vital MX post-race show. Thank you to Decal Works, Beta, and Fox Racing for their continued support. We're on week four of this show. We are 24% through Monster Energy Supercross, 22%, somewhere around there. We're moving through this quite rapidly. Round five, Detroit, coming up. We will have this podcast, post-race interviews, and whatnot from Michigan. So stay tuned for that. Thank you for your support. We will see you next week.